Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
This is In This League Overtime. Some of the best from Chris Welsh and Scott Bogman on the In This League Podcast Network and FNTSY. Now, it's time for OT.
How would you like to manage
In This League
this year?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know? This is a chance to manage in the big leagues.
Let me think it over, will you?
Scott Bogman.
I got
Chris Welsh.
On the other line about some white walls. I'll talk to you later.
All right. It's our guy, Paul Spohr from Fangraphs. All the beautiful places. The place, your number one podcast. Your number one Twitch place. All of that stuff. We get it. We know. We're not stupid.
Wild thing, Paul Spohr.
Ooh, I like it. With the glasses, too. It makes sense. That's right. Polly, what's up, buddy?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're doing good.
Doing great.
What's up in your world, man? What's up? What's up, man?
It's all baseball all the time, man.
Yeah.
Baseball
I want one streams, of those.
Baseball podcasts, baseball writing.
I want one of those badass shirts. We had Colette on a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about your guys' very awesome shirt. And I love yours specifically, you know. Tall, lean, with the glasses at the top. I mean, it's perfect.
Whoever's idea to put the glasses was great. And
pretty great, right?
It had to be. Was that Justin's idea for the to make his the wider one?
I think that was all the designer. I mean, we talked about different things, and the guys over at RotoWear. I mean, they're incredible. Ken's doing a great job. So I just loved how it worked. I wonder if maybe on another one down the line we could add something for Jason and Justin as well. Maybe put a beard on Justin's and a little travel.
Put a little W. Put the Whataburger. Jason. Put the Whataburger symbol on Jason's, and that'd be good.
He would love to have the Whataburger for sure.
We need to get like the whole crew back on, because I've had people hitting me up about Jason and Whataburger. Like, I don't know what it was. When we were talking about some state that Jason was going to and didn't have Whataburger, I literally had someone message me and be like, hey, just pass this along to Jason that, like, there actually is two Whataburgers, and they gave me the directions, and I was like, wow, this is so thoughtful. Like,
that's hilarious.
People are very, very thoughtful.
I'm actually offended that they didn't send me the directions to Whataburger.
Yeah, I don't know why I got it, but I did, so I've got that for Jason. Paul, do you have any... Could we, like, sit here for a second and just say, let's say, like, not bad words, but, like, kind of gross words that we could play half speed? Like, I said, not saying ejaculate again, though I just said it. Ugh. I have one, and it's really about reactions with Bogman. Panties.
Oh. Moist panties, yeah.
Oh, moist.
Oh, God.
Yep. Yeah, definitely.
What other words? Let's see.
And I was thinking on one the other day. I can't remember what it was, and I was like, this is on a level of moist.
Regurgitation.
Yeah, that's not a
good one. That'll be a good slow one. I mean, it's not great, you know, normal, but.
I'm trying to think of, like, I got one that we can beep, but it's more mine. Like, when I hear and that's going to be beeped, so no one will know. That one to me is a little like no one will know what it is, but you'll get the gist when we keep going. Like, I don't like that word. I don't know why. That word is, it's not great for me. And I love Paul's actually reaction. Maybe that's the one, because it'll be a beep and it'll be like beep, and then Paul's reaction there. I'm not a fan of that word. You, Paul?
You heard it here first. The Welsh doesn't like put.
Yep, that's right.
I am married. I am married, so I mean that's a fact. So all right, well, here's what we'll say.
It's something that you're never around.
It's just, yeah, that's a good point. It's just the word. Like, Bogman and I did this. We did this whole thing a long time ago. I don't even remember how long it was. Just about words that when you hear them and you're just like, I don't know.
Moist is always like the top one. Yeah. That's just so obvious.
I hate the baby talk because I'm not around children ever, like yummy and tummy.
Oh, yummy is one.
Anything that ends with Y like that, that can be like that is for children. It creeps me out.
Moist panties?
Yep.
God, what is your problem?
Is that your favorite website?
Yeah. No, it's definitely not.
I mean, he's definitely searched it, but Paul, by the way.
It's not Evil Angel, so no, it's not.
We do have to give Paul credit because he is technically the creator of the finding the fantastic half speed. Because like I said before, yeah, you text us and I didn't hear it for days. And then you got my text probably 2 or 3 days later where I actually listened to it. And I was, I don't know where I was crying laughing listening to that thing. So
Paul also has a theory that Greg Amsinger and Adam Azer have to be related, right?
Yeah, they're the same person, right?
I like
they
that.
They look a lot alike, like an older brother or like a dad situation. Because
Greg Amsinger just looks like Tanner Adam Azer,
just like more put. Yeah. Like more put together, more hair gel or whatever. No, I'm just saying, like, and they kind of speak similarly. They have similar outlooks. I don't know. I just think that they're.
No one's ever seen him in the same room together. Right.
Haven't. And maybe that's who Azer's aspiring to be. And that would be a pretty good, you know, lead desk of MLB Tonight. Not a bad aspirational goal there for Azer, but it seems like it's kind of his doppelganger.
You know what I like? I like that, like, you, Paul, you're like literally the center of the fantasy baseball universe.
Oh,
and
God.
Like, oh, no. We need, and like, I like the conspiracy. Like,
fantasy baseball.
Well, yeah, baseball. I should say baseball world. Like, I like that maybe you can get into conspiracies. Like, you're rewinding audio. Like, listen to Bogman of the Welsh backwards. And we're like, you know, sell your soul to the devil. And then you're like, these people are twins. It'll be like, you're like Art Bell. It'll be coast to coast with Paul Spohr that only old people will get that reference.
No, I discovered it accidentally when I was kind of listening to the show and accidentally hit the speed up button, cycling through, stopped on the slow, and it was right at that part. I didn't even have to search for it. That was all a happy accident, and that's what makes it that much better as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I love it. What's going on in your world? Not that anyone that listens to this doesn't also listen to your show, but just like, what's up in your universe? You got the Twitch, which is one of the best Twitches out there. You got the podcast, obviously. Let's promo something.
I mean, it's just full baseball, man. You can find me at Fangraphs pretty much every day of the week. Usually Mondays, I don't have anything because everyone else kind of we have a lot going there, and so there's no real need. And I can kind of get everything situated for the week. I do my ESPN daily notes. I write those on Mondays. Once a week for the Tuesday games, and then streaming, you know, 4 to 6 times a week usually.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful person. All right.
I
don't want to dominate so much here, Bogman, and definitely throw in here. I just want to set the table before we kind of get into a couple questions because I don't want to lose a couple of these. First and foremost, well, let's get to the funny since we're kind of in the funny realm. Who is more unlikable, Paul? Matt Harvey or Trevor Bauer?
Bauer. No. Harvey.
Okay.
Harvey for sure.
We ran a poll.
Conflicted.
Yeah.
Honestly, I didn't even mean to say Bauer. That was a total slip. I totally feel y'all on Bauer, agree on like
his face,
the douchiness and the punchable face of it all. It's definitely Harvey, though. I think Bauer's fully self-aware, and with the whole incident with the dust up, he was actually making a great point. I think he just framed it improperly and kind of looped in the Astros unnecessarily and kind of, you know,
he could have just
cast aspersions on them. Yeah, he could have just really focused more on it. But I think he has like some beef with Garrett Cole or whatever. At least that's what people were saying.
Well, isn't Garrett Cole UCLA?
Yeah. They both stare together.
Okay.
But Harvey is just a giant prick and not self-aware enough to know that like he's not good anymore. And so, you know, the game humbled you, dog. Accept it because it's there. And I don't like that. I don't see that as like some fighting attitude or anything like that. Like, you don't have your stuff. You're not where you were. You need to figure some stuff out. This is not a everything else problem. This is a you problem. And I admit injuries ravaged Harvey's career, but we've seen guys build up from much deeper depths. He needs to get his act together and realize that if he wants to keep doing this for another, you know, 6-7 years, he's going to have to make some changes. So it's definitely Harvey because I just don't think he's self-aware enough to know that he's really lost.
Yeah, I mean,
10 steps.
If you remember, I don't know how much of the show you caught last week, but I like, or actually it was in the radio show. I think we might've been talking about this. So probably didn't catch it, but I was likening, both of these guys, Matt Harvey, to like the 24-year-old out of high school that still wears his high school jacket and still shows up at the school.
Matthew McConaughey.
Oh, yeah. He hasn't let go of that. Where Bauer is kind of like, you know, he's just kind of the Asperger-y type of like narky kid that just doesn't work for anybody, and everyone kind of hates him. But he's just like he just still like
exists.
Kind of
hate him because he's like good and smart, but annoying as hell.
He's like the cocky ass nerd kid. He's not like the humble one.
No filter. He's a no filter weirdo.
And you know, somebody who's really skilled and really smart can be very dangerous. And I don't mean that in like a actual I mean, dangerous in terms of like really snarky and funny and like, be careful if you go at Trevor Bauer because he'll smack you. I understand why people don't like him. I share in that. He annoys the shit out of me, but that's kind of part of the appeal. It's because I'm like, damn, he's right. He's smart. It's a good point.
Did you agree, by the way? Again, I don't know if you caught this on any of the shows we talked about, but I said that if it were anybody but Bauer putting this out into the world, because I agreed. I'm with what you just said. I agree. If this, obviously there is a problem. I think this problem exists if it's being talked about. Maybe it's not to the degree Trevor Bauer is bringing it. Maybe it's even worse. But we've seen, you know, guys like Pineda, who I refer to as the Roach of this issue, because he's the moron that would just put it on his neck. If this is an issue, it needs to be discussed. Anybody but Trevor Bauer does it, it gets the attention that it deserves, not the Bauer attention.
Yeah, I certainly think that didn't help. And then kind of the thrust of his argument about how, you know, he didn't get to have the glue on his finger, but it was because of the drone thing, which everyone was like, oh, you stupid idiot, you know. Yep. So, like, it just comes from everything at an angle where everyone's already looking to kind of be upset and annoyed by him. So, yeah, there probably could have been a better messenger. But, you know, again, as long as he hadn't really gone after the Astros, and he didn't. But if he hadn't looped them into it, I think it could have been more of like, hey, everyone's using stuff. How did I get so crapped on? But it happened to be in the context of, look at what's going on with the Astros, and that gave him a chance to kind of bring it back up.
All right, enough of these losers. How about a good pitcher?
Yeah.
Patrick Corbin.
Yeah.
Patrick Corbin ran away with our poll that we did between Corbin and Yu Darvish. It was not close. Has this first month of amazing Patrick Corbin solidified this take as a no-brainer, or is this kind of these guys, you know, are obviously going to meet in the middle somewhere and you're going to be regretting taking Corbin over Darvish, you know, at the end of the season?
Corbin was 74, just so you know the context, Corbin was 74% over Yu Darvish. 74% of people wanted Corbin over Darvish rest of season.
The only way I can really see it going to a situation where you desperately regret going Corbin as if he got hurt, which can't really project for anything, so that kind of nullifies the bet there if it's anything more than like a little 2 week sort of rest type of deal. If it's an actual like catastrophic injury month plus, I think that renders everything, you know, moot in terms of seeing who's better. But from the rest of the way, I can't say, I don't know if it's like resounding, because I have Patrick Corbin 17th in my update, and I had Darvish at 20. Now, I agonized over Darvish's rankings. I do the must start, usually start sort. I break it into tiers.
Yeah.
And the must start tier goes down to 33. If you wanted Darvish down there, that's fine. I don't really get hung up on the numbers. It's funny because we just did, Nick and I, we've been doing this thing on Sunday, second one this week, where we just kind of talk about one pitcher. It's our little fireside chats. We did Luis Castillo talk last week. Did Yu Darvish talk this week? And the bottom line we came to was that things just aren't that wrong to really deserve a 6.05 ERA or to believe that it's unfixable. And so I think he is a pretty easy buy low and somebody that, with some things that can change both on his end and maybe at another end, and I'll leave that for people to listen to, that he could get going again. So I do take Corbin because I kind of live in the here now. I know we drafted Darvish way higher. Things have changed, right? It's been a month. Things have changed. It is a small sample. It doesn't mean Corbin will be this great going forward, but he's certainly shown that he's very good. He was very good in the second half of last year too. This is not out of nowhere. If you said like Caleb Smith over Yu Darvish, I push back. Patrick Corbin's a previously high-quality pitcher, pitching his best ball in an environment, at least half of his games, at home that now favors pitchers where it used to hurt them. And he only has two games on the road, both of which were good, by the way. So I'm not saying this is a product of the home. I'm saying the home is helping with that elite slider. So, yes, it is Corbin over Darvish. And I guess resoundingly means I'm not really questioning it, but I don't, that for me, that doesn't mean that there's like 20 pitchers between them.
Yeah, I agree. It's just it's an affirmative, like, yeah, no, this is Corbin over Darvish, and it doesn't mean Darvish is buried in any of that conversation. It's just, yeah, there's not much swing in it. I'm going Corbin on it.
It should be firm Corbin.
Yeah, I mean, and he, I think he's proven at this point. And, you know, we
Corbin all, also is gross.
Yeah, that is kind of gross. Firm Corbin.
You get firm when you think about Corbin.
Yeah, I do. Oh, gross. You get moist.
No, he probably does.
They definitely 100% does. Corbin is really interesting because we've been fighting. I think you you, Paul, you're a lot more kind of just locked into your stuff. I don't think you fight about this necessarily as much, but I think people in writing and podcasting, everything like that, you're kind of in this realm of fighting the early sample size versus where do we believe it. And Corbin has kind of towed that line, but he hasn't faltered at any point. So he's solidified in this is a real thing. We've got to buy into it. We started the show. We don't have to go crazy about this because this is semantics on talking about the best pitching in baseball. We talked about how Scherzer had his 69th nice double-digit strikeout game of his career, striking out 15. And I bet a lot of people are asking this question all the time, but let's have it here. Is Max Scherzer the best pitcher in baseball? And is it now affirmative? Clayton Kershaw on the DL. Clayton Kershaw, he's still there. He's still going to always be in the conversation. I think it's a top three. Kluber's gone in there. Some people bought Scherzer as the top guy this year. I feel like in my small brain sample size, and I think over the last 3 years, Scherzer is so consistent in everything that he does. Is Max Scherzer the best? And we can keep it to fantasy as well. Is he the best fantasy baseball pitcher going right now?
Well, I mean, it doesn't matter if you do fantasy or otherwise, because when you're talking about the very best, there's no way for me that the best pitcher in fantasy isn't also the best pitcher in baseball. Okay. And that is Max Scherzer, and that's where I had him coming into the season. I didn't think it was all that controversial. There were other people that had it as well. And it's nothing against Kershaw so much as it is, okay, I mean, there's a little bit where he pulled back to the pack and the pack jumped up to him. So those two forces made it for where those top four were Kershaw by himself and then the three. Now it's just the four guys, and you can kind of jumble them up how you want. I do think now with the start of the season that we've seen from Scherzer, it's pretty hard for me to see a real case for him not to be number one.
It almost feels like he's like sitting in his own kind of tier. Like maybe the tier isn't so much more above
Kershaw
everyone else.
Tier. Yeah. Might have taken over that Kershaw tier. I can definitely hear that more than I could hear like Sale or Kluber number one. It's not really against them or even Kershaw. It's just we have to acknowledge what Scherzer's doing. Scherzer's the absolute best pitcher in baseball right now as far as I'm concerned.
Love watching the guy. I love watching that damn guy.
He's so amazing.
Yeah, he is, Bachman. What do you got, Bob?
So, well, I was going to ask about Luis Castillo, but you already talked about him a little bit.
Did you get to a 40-minute episode on Luis Castillo?
Yep. It was mainly Castillo. The whole
sum
thing.
It down in 15 seconds. Are you buying him? Or are you selling him?
Buying.
Okay, that's what I thought. We talked about that. All right. And by the way, Luis Castillo lost our poll to Yu Darvish. 60% still wanted Yu.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
You're listening to In This League Overtime. Some of the best from the In This League Podcast Network. Find all their shows and more of what you've heard at InThisLeague.com.
What about? I also understand people cutting Castillo, and we mentioned that. That doesn't mean we are. That's not our recommendation. But I understand it. Not everyone can hang on and wait this out, especially if you didn't have the confidence that we did coming in. It's just, and I'm very encouraged by the most recent start, of course, which was his best of the year against.
And it was quality.
Sometimes all you need
even in a loss,
even if it's one of those like factors that. How real is it? But you just need some reassurance to hear them identify a mechanical issue with whether it's your windup or a specific pitch like they did with the changeup. Hearing those type of things and knowing that they are actively working towards it, to me, breeds all the confidence in the world to say this is the type of guy you want to buy in on, and this is the guy also you just don't cut bait on because it's still early in the season and they're finding issues to work on, and then voila. Game after they talk about that, you have got outstanding results. So,
not only that, it's still easy to get hung up on ERAs this early, and they can change pretty drastically just with that one start. Castillo cut almost a full run off of his ERA, 0.84 off of his ERA with that one six innings, two earned. Like, that's not the most amazing start in the world. It's a really good start, but and it ate up almost a full run. So he's had two really bad starts, some walk issues, some things are wrong, but they're fixable. I'm still buying Luis Castillo, especially on the cheap, because he's so cheap now.
He is
really cheap. And so all of this pitching stuff, we were talking about this on the radio show, where, you know, Luis Castillo starts bad, Darvish starts bad. We've had some injuries, you know, Kershaw, DeGrom, Cueto, all of these guys going down. Is this going to lead? I feel like it's going to lead to one of two things: either stockpiling pitchers because they're inconsistent and they get hurt, so you probably need more of them to cover the ones that either get hurt or are not good. Or is that like juggling dynamite, where now you've wasted picks on some of these pitchers, the ones that got hurt? And I'm not talking about like in the, you know, taking three pitchers in the first five rounds or anything. I'm just talking about maybe instead of having that big gap, because a lot of people's strategy is, I like to get one or two at the top, wait a long time. Or there are guys that just say, I'm not going to take a pitcher before round seven.
So you're saying are you saying it's going to do one of two things? It's going to A, either make people double down on making sure they have stockpiled all the pitching, or they are going to double down on making sure they have the elite of the elite of the elite.
Right. And I think that the, not wanting to take pitchers has already kind of been done. Do you think that it could reverse and go the other way, where people are stockpiling pitchers earlier in their drafts from now on because of all of this stuff?
I think we see some of that. We certainly have seen some of it recently, particularly with the NFBC leagues kind of, they lean pitching heavy. And I think that's trickled down to other leagues. Of course, it's format specific, but just a standard categories league, roto league. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. With the pitching's volatility, there's no one way to do it. And I don't think there's a singular right way to do it. And that's not a cop-out answer. It's just the truth.
Yeah.
There's this thing that Chris Liss was talking about on the SiriusXM show that he has about the mid-tier pitcher, the second tier, the ones that go in the, let's say, like 10 to 25 range of starting pitcher was like a really bad investment for a few years. Well, this year, early on, it looks like an amazing investment. So the second that you latch onto a trend, things change, because the pool is so volatile and not at all stationary. You have different types of pitchers moving up and down, like who's being bought in that area, you know, who's being rostered at those prices and whatnot. So I don't think that I would overreact one way or another. The bottom line is that when you are building your pitching staff, you need to understand that the one that you draft, about half of it's going to really be there for you, and then you're going to have to work. You're going to have to do work. You can't draft to let your pitching. There's no draft strategy to say, set it and forget it with my pitching now. You're going to have to do work, because guys are going to fluctuate up and down. And, you know, especially if you're in a 10, 12 team mixer where there's a lot of talent on the pool, you're going to have to be aggressive, because nobody was drafting Caleb Smith and now he's striking out everybody in sight. And, you know, guys like that, and there's throngs of them that come up every year that are worth hanging on to for a month too, right? I think another thing that's kind of kind of hits the industry is the idea that a recommendation is for the full season.
That's a great point.
And right.
So
yeah.
If I'm not going to recommend this guy if I don't think he's good for the full year.
That's why
year.
I've always said ride the wave on some
exactly.
of these guys.
We talked about that with Jed Lowry. Like, they don't drop, you know, your best players for Jed Lowry, but like if they're hot, you pick them up and you ride it while you can. That's the old Ubaldo Jimenez effect. Remember, you do the four or five starts and get the hell out before it blows up.
And that's the problem. Nobody gets the hell out. They don't. Like, okay, here's a good one right now. And we actually talked about him. So what we do on the Fireside Chat, we have the main pitcher, and then we check in on a couple pitchers at the end. We did a little check-in, Nick and I, on Reynaldo Lopez, who's got that 2.43 ERA, but like no skills to support it. And we talked about how his fastball is pretty good. There's still some stuff. We could see some development. But you just got 37 innings of a 2.43 ERA and a 1.22 whip despite an awful strikeout-to-walk ratio. Get out in a 10-team mixed league. Get out in a 12-team mixer and go pick up Caleb Smith or Fernando Romero and try something, because we know that's coming to a head on some level, barring major development. And I think the problem is people buy players as short-term and they never get out. They're like, well, it's been going well. No, you drafted him for two starts. He was great in those two starts. You do not believe in him, move on, unless something has drastically changed. So I think that's part of it with pitching. That's why I always say in those pitcher update rankings, this isn't for the rest of the season. I don't know how the rest of the season is going to go. It's insane to try to make a list for the rest of the season in May. That it's hard to do it, obviously, preseason as well. And that's why I don't get hung up on the number and more about the quality of talent. And so you have to focus more shorter term. Look at your pitchers in 3 to 6 week kind of groupings of about how long you want to keep them.
I love it.
Outside
I think
of the studs.
I think so it's so funny.
Though, with that, though, I think that you're kind of sticking with the, you know, late draft strategy overall, though, right?
I always like to have a couple in the first, call it like, I don't know, eight, ten rounds, depending on league size.
Okay.
And, I like to have my guys. I don't necessarily go the first two rounds and get one of the big four this year, but if it falls to me, I do. Scherzer was available at 15 in my TGFBI, so I went ahead and scooped him. You know, I don't think there's one way to do it. I think it's all about league format and everything. You have to kind of adjust and understand that if you're not going to put in the work, then I guess you got to try to draft it all up front, but you can't. And I don't want to keep repeating, but I just think that there isn't one way to do it. That's not a cop-out answer. It's just the truth. And I would not overreact to every month of trend.
I love it. I feel like like I said, it's funny because I literally recall, I don't know what it was, 3 years ago, the three of us sitting here talking about Ubaldo Jimenez, who had like six straight starts, and we're all just like, get out, you know, and like, that's just what you do. You have to be able to do that. Speaking of which, this is kind of a put on the spot question. I'm not trying to, but as we're talking about, you know, getting out, buying in, not buying in, anything like that, when you look at kind of like that top list of players, you know, pitcher, hitter, some of the guys that have maybe overperformed, and I'm going to just list off some names here, and if there's any others, you can feel free to. But who do you buy into the most of for the rest of the season, as much as we can do that, by the way? Because you are right. You want to look in kind of blocks. But what I mean by this is like, I don't want to take Mookie Betts necessarily, even though he's a number one player in 5x5 standard right now. I think that's an interesting one. Can he stick there? But I'm talking like AJ Pollock. He's top 10 right now. You've got, going through the list, Jed Lowry is top 20. Ozzie Albies at 19. Looking. You've got Javier Baez, who's at 35. You go look at some pitchers. Gerrit Cole's the number one fantasy pitcher. You've got guys like Sean Manaea, Patrick Corbin that are sitting on this list. So what I'm asking you is give me one or two that is the most believable of this trend continuing in your eyes.
Well, most believable is Ozzie Albies, of course.
Mm.
Because he's behind amazing. Corbin.
you know, Pollock's been a star before. I'm not really surprised to see him performing like a star again. I think I was mostly scared off by the health, so I really wasn't drafting him, but I totally understand, you know, what we're seeing here has merit. So, you know, who are all the names you mentioned there? Betts,
well, you got, yeah, it's just like who strikes you as like, wow, what we're seeing this season is the likelihood of it. I mean, you got Gerrit Cole, Patrick Corbin, Sean Manaea, some of the hitters I listed off. I mean, put Jed Lowry, Albies, Pham, Pollock, guys like that, Didi.
See, and, you know, Didi's really interesting because there's some major skill changes there. They're pretty obscene. I'm just not sure he can maintain, you know, walking more than he's striking out. But he leverages that ballpark. He has a lot of short homers. And I don't say that to discredit him. It's just the truth that he does hit a lot of shorter homers. I believe a lot of, like, what we're seeing in terms of their quality players. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't see some regression, but, like, Jed Lowry's always been a really solid, skilled player. He just never stays healthy. So that's one. When I picked him up, I was like, well, he'll probably get nicked at some point, but let me go ahead and just see what's what here. Not that he's ever had a 1,000 OPS, but he had an 808 last year. He doesn't strike out. He takes walks. He's in on the power surge here with the bouncy ball. That's the thing, too. When I see kind of power that might look a little unbelievable because it didn't match their previous record or the minor league trends, I'm more inclined to believe it now just because of the way power is in the majors. Like, you get a power boost when you come up from AAA to the majors because of the way the ball is playing right now. Like, that's plain and simple. You're going to get like 7 to 10 feet on your fly ball distance. So the guy that's only hitting like 9 homers in the minors comes up and he's popping 15. You're like, what the heck? it's not really some sort of major power surge usually, but it is the environment that we're in. This is an environment just as much as like the PCL or the Sally League or anything of the, any of those are too. So most of those guys you named, I really buy in on their skills. I'm trying to think if there's any I'm really leaning away from. I liked Pham. I was trying to buy on him this year. You didn't really name anybody. Of course, Cole's going to come down, right? But would you, anybody really be surprised if he was an ace?
Yeah, that's where I'm getting. That's where I'm kind of getting at it.
That's what everyone expected when he came up. Everyone expected Cole to do that. I like Manai. I like a lot of those names too. I got one for you. Make the Welsh respect Christian Villanueva.
I mean, I don't disrespect Villanueva, but
disrespect nothing but venom and vile.
No,
do I get every time I bring up Christian Villanueva? He's like, no. No.
What's the expectation? We need to define the parameters here. I need to know what are we seeing.
He can be a starting corner infielder for your team in a 12 team mixed league.
Yeah. Yep. He's going to hit I think he's going to hit like 30s, low 30s homers. Mm-hmm. The batting average will come down, but he's in the best park to be a lefty killer. I don't know if you saw my tweet the other day. The NL West has the most lefty starters. And so obviously that's going to be where a lot of his games are played within the division. And they're just trolling out. They're just rolling out lefty starters left and right all across all the teams. Same for Pollock, by the way, who also beasts on lefties, and his team has the fewest. So him between he and Villanueva, not that I'm comparing the two, but just for the versus lefties thing, being on Arizona versus being on San Diego gives you two more lefty starters to face. And it's not Patrick Corbin. So it's an even bigger advantage than that, because Villanueva doesn't get to face the scrubs on his team and has to face Villanueva instead. So, I think he can hit like, 20, 22 more homers or something. And with like a 250 average, that seems pretty good.
I don't think that's out of that. I was treating Villanueva. Listen, my treatment of Villanueva is exactly the conversation we've been having here, though, where I'd almost treat him like Reynaldo Lopez. Like, I'm not, maybe not as direct to just be like, oh yeah, I just openly cut. But if someone went and put an established hitter that was struggling out on the wire, and it was a choice between Villanueva, I might have done that. Like, I'm not with necessarily those exact same expectations of low 30s. Could he walk into 25 this year? Sure, it's possible. Is the average going to go below 250? It's very possible. Could he be replaced sometime midseason if he struggles? I mean, the four-game 0-for streak he's got, yes, it is also possible. They have got some replacements out there, not necessarily at third base, mind you, but they could move that team around. Tatis, if they wanted to bring him up, he could go to third because they got Galvis, Luis Urias. They've got stuff that they could do. It's just my buy-in isn't, oh, yeah, he's a starting third baseman or he's a no-brainer corner infielder. He's just, no, he's a rosterable player until he's not anymore. That was my only thing. It's a credible start to the season. You don't cut that for nothing, but he also might be one of the first cuttable pieces on a 12-man team.
I mean, in deeper, a 12-team, sure. I don't think that's necessarily out of bounds or anything like that. Obviously, I would keep an eye on, how many lefties they're going to be facing in a given week. If they've got a couple, then you start them. And if you play in one of those things that does kind of the half weeks, for example, this week, they face two lefties in the first 4 days. There's no game Thursday. So they're three-game set against San Francisco, two lefties. Well, maybe not, though, because Suarez started today and he's listed as one. That's neither here nor there. Mm. Actually, I don't know how. Yeah, no, I did it right. Sorry. So you look at that, right? And if you have one of those things where you can make moves on Fridays, depending on where they're facing more lefties, San Diego, that should determine how often. Okay, I did have the wrong date. They only face one lefty this week, and it's Gio Gonzalez, who's pitching pretty well.
So maybe bench him in a weekly.
So maybe bench him. Yeah. And I'm fine with that. But you could still miss a couple homers. There's going to be lefty relievers. He's absolutely decimating lefties. But when there's six righties in a seven-game week, yes, in a 12-team, you should find somebody else. Hopefully you have a platoon on kind of, another on the favorable side that you can put in for him. I can agree with that. But like in a 15-team, I'm not sure that, you will have that short of a leash. And of course, in the NL only, he's found money. And so even if he is only kind of a platoon guy, he's easy. But yeah, 10 and 12 team, you kind of ride it out. But I think there's 30 homer power here.
By the way, just seeing this, Dodgers are saying that Clayton Kershaw's MRI confirmed the diagnosis of bicep tendonitis, but he's going to begin rehab tomorrow. today as people are listening to this. So just putting that out there as we talk about Max Scherzer being the best. Last thing, Paul Spohr was the kindest of kind, the very first human being. We talked about this before. The very first person to immediately say when we decided to write our fun little project book, The 99 Fantasy Baseball Player Debates, he said, I'm in, because Paul is a wonderful human being like that. And what he did was he was one of our judges, judged about 20 of these debates, some fantastic ones. So in season, we have been doing it with many guests, the guests that participated. We wanted to kind of revisit them and just see what you think. You know, what are our thoughts? Look back at them. And how about I'll start with the first one here, Polly. Alex Bregman versus Andrew Benintendi. We had you, Pisa Pia, and Jake Seeley on this one. Jake Seeley, Bregman 10-9 was the vote. Pisa Pia, Benintendi 10-9. You with the draw, giving it a split decision, one of the few split decisions. What do you think about Bregman versus Benintendi after the fact?
Yeah, that's tough because, yeah, I mean, it's really tough to separate the two. I'm not sure that I'm much different now. I will say that there is a little bit of an advantage for the infield position eligibility versus the outfield for Bregman over Benintendi there. But another slow start by Bregman. I think he went yard yesterday or today. I can't remember. So that's, second homer. I see the plate skills and everything. I'm fine with where he's at. I'm fine with both really right now. And I was kind of anti Benintendi where he was being drafted, but then I had Bregman. I was fine with him being drafted where he was. So that's a little bit contradictory there. So I got to be a little bit more affirmative with Benintendi being fine where he was drafted or bring Bregman.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
In This League Overtime. Want more? Go to InThisLeague.com. Here's Bogman and the Welsh.
John, just real quick, overarching thoughts on this class. Was this an enjoyable draft to watch? Were you disappointed by anything? Let's hear it.
I actually love the draft. I mean, to me, it shows you the difference in the NFL and the direction that we are going in. As an example, Bo Scarborough and Equanimeous St. Brown.
Yeah.
If it was 10 years ago, they would have gone in the first two rounds, definitely the first three rounds of the draft. But what we are seeing is the NFL is now transitioning to a game of space, speed, and mismatches, and they want agility. And you saw a lot of smaller players. Nyheim Hines, who I like, was drafted before Bo Scarborough. That never would have happened 10 years ago, probably even 5 years ago. And the same exact thing, Kiki Kuti, who I like as an NFL prospect, he was drafted long before Equanimeous St. Brown. And, I mean, I remember the draft where you had guys like Jonathan Baldwin drafted out of Pittsburgh to the Kansas City Chiefs because of his size and his speed, and he was a complete bust at the NFL level. They are now looking for quick twitch athletes who can win in one-on-one situations and exploit matchups. And you see that happening in this draft. It has never been more obvious than what happened over last weekend, those 3 days.
Yeah, I mean, if you look especially at the first wide receivers taken, there's no monster in that group. I mean, Cortland Sutton's big, but Moore and Ridley are kind of, average size. Ridley's undersized. Christian Kirk's a little bit smaller. Anthony Miller's smaller. It's not until you get to DJ Chark to where you really get, the really tall, fast, what it used to be specific profile of an NFL wide receiver. So you're absolutely right about that. Give me real quick. Let's go negative for a second. Worst pick in the draft.
Worst pick in the draft. I think it's Josh Allen. I'm trying. I'm trying not to beat, you know, a dead horse for a lack right now of a better analogy. I do not understand what the Buffalo Bills are doing. And let's put aside the skill set for a second, or what we think of as long term. I dare anyone to name two Buffalo Bill wide receivers other than Zay Jones, who last we saw was naked on video camera. So this,
and we have Kelvin Benjamin at tight end.
There you go. Okay, so we got one. I mean, and LeSean McCoy is very old in the teeth, a future Hall of Famer, incredible NFL career, but he's on the wrong side of 30. They've had some change over at the offensive line is much worse than it's been. I just think this kid has disaster written all over him. But I think the Bills trading up to acquire him, I'm really shocked by that. I'm stunned. And, you know, I guess there's a, you know, why did the Raiders, let's just say the whole Raiders draft is shocking. How about that? I don't really understand what John Gruden, that organization, is doing right now.
Neither do they. So that's good.
Yeah, they made a lot of picks, and I don't think I like any of them.
Yeah, I'm looking at this roster here for the Bills. Woof. Andre Holmes, Jeremy Curley, and then, I mean, Malachi Dupree out of LSU was kind of interesting a couple years ago. Rod Streeter, Quan Bray, I don't know who that is. Brandon Riley, I barely remember him. Kalen Clay, I've never heard of. So just a bunch of scrubs.
Yeah, and they lost their center, their Pro Bowl, or their, you know, their best offensive lineman, Richie Cognito, who really knows, you know, he wants to retire. He did retire. He's thinking of coming back. They don't know what to do. I mean, this is a bad situation for the young man.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, they build around him. Hopefully he doesn't have to play this year. And they kind of build around him. To be honest with you, I thought it was Terrell Edmonds going to my Pittsburgh Steelers in the first round. I thought that was a ridiculous pick. But like, the more I read about it, the more comfortable I am. I hated the Steelers draft class overall, but everyone has heard me say that on every single podcast I've been a part of. So I won't beat that dead horse either. So why don't we jump into some questions here? I'm going to start out at the very top. Pick number two, Saquon Barkley goes. How high is Saquon's draft value on the Giants? Do you think he's a first round pick for fantasy this season? And if so, where do you put him in the first round?
Right now, I have him ranked at number nine.
Wow.
I do. Look, it. You're looking at a player who's sensational in the passing game. And when I analyze this team and look at the New York Giants offensively, I do not see how Saquon Barkley does not catch 55 passes out of the backfield. So obviously, if you're in a standard scoring league, I could make the argument that Saquon Barkley is outside of the top 12. But if you are in a PPR scoring format, I think it is fair to say you get 1,000 yards rushing, you get 52 pass receptions, you get double-digit touchdowns. And if you're getting that from your running back, to me, that is around the number 9 to 11 pick in the draft. I understand if there are conservative drafters who would rather go a veteran. I get that. I'm such a crackhead. I've done two best ball drafts, my friend. And Barkley went at number 8 and 9 in both drafts. One draft I had number 6, so I took DeAndre Hopkins. That's another podcast for another day. Love Hopkins at number 6. And then in the other draft, I had pick number 11, and I couldn't even get Barkley. So I have him right now as a first-round pick solidly in PPR leagues. He could be gold.
So, I mean, I got to agree with you. You know, drafting Saquon Barkley is kind of like drafting someone in between Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara from last season. So he's going to do a little bit of both of that for the Giants. So you can get extra excited about this dude. Now, I put out a poll right after the draft, and I asked people, actually just in the draft room. So I did a live stream during the draft all 3 days, and I was just asking people who their number 2 back is out of this bunch, and I got 5 different answers as to who is the next back in this class behind Barkley. I had some people say Darius Geis, Ronald Jones, Kerryon Johnson, Nick Chubb, and Sony Michel. I got all those. And a lot of people are jumping in on the Royce Freeman train because going to Denver is a great, great landing spot. So I'm going to get your 1 through 10. You don't have to dwell on all of them. But how would you list the 1 through 10 out of this class? Because it's difficult to do, I think.
It is very difficult. And one of the reasons I love the upcoming fantasy football season, there is a wide variety of opinions. I tend to think ADP is going to work itself out, but I do think there are going to be people who jump ahead to get their guy way ahead of what ADP may say. So I'm just looking right now on MFL 10. Saquon Barkley's ADP out of 478 drafts, my friend, is number 10. So he's there. You go. I mean, that's a lot of drafts, and these are hardcore people. I mean, right. I don't think I'm drafted with a casual friend right now, right?
No. No room for boobs yet. So
yes. So I've got my top 10. It'll be going up on football. Actually, the top 12 will be going up on the football diehards at the end of this weekend. But I haven't written it all up. I've started to do it. Got my projections. But I have finalized.
This is a sneak peek.
Yes, this is a sneak peek. I'll give you my top 10 now.
Okay.
I'm a Darius Geis guy. He's my second guy. I just had a dynasty draft. I acquired an orphan team. You know, the owner finished second to last. He didn't want to come back. A friend reached out to me on Twitter, said, John, do you want to take over this dynasty team? I said, you know what? I love the challenge. The roster is barren, but I do have Odell Beckham. So at least I got a cornerstone.
Okay.
I have the second pick in the draft. I took Darius Geis. I'm never going to tell someone something that I don't do. That's just my own personal philosophy.
Yeah.
I understand in PPR leagues, people might go elsewhere. I'm a Darius Geis guy.
I have
always have been. Yeah. And look it. He is a great runner. And people, watch the film. He's a better pass catcher than he is given credit for. Now, he's not going to get 52 touch, you know, pass receptions.
Right.
But I could see 30, and I'll take those 30 points in a PPR scoring format. He's my number two. And if the Redskins' offensive line stays healthy, I think they'll get that running game going again.
They're
going
to have to hand it off more, too, because Alex Smith and Kirk Cousins, so.
I think he's got 250 touches. I really do. Look at the depth chart. Who's challenging him? I know Chris Thompson will get touches.
Yes.
But there are plenty of touches to go around in Washington. Now, my number three, I like Rashad Penny. I have some concerns about his ability to block blitzers and to catch the football, but the touches are there. The depth chart is weak. He's my number three.
Okay.
I'm higher on him, the next player, than most. I love him. Royce Freeman.
Royce Freeman, four. Okay.
He's four in my book. I'll tell you why. It's the depth chart. There is no one in Denver to challenge him.
Devontae Booker challenges him?
No, Booker is not an alpha male running back. I'm a Bronco fan. I've watched every Devontae Booker carry for the first 2 years in his NFL career. I've seen CJ Anderson every play for the last 3 years. Freeman is better, more explosive than all of them. And watch the film of his freshman year at Oregon.
See, that's my concern about Freeman, is last year you watch him after that knee injury and there was just no burst after he got past the line. Are you concerned about that at all? Do you think it's going to be one of those, the further you move away from that injury, the more he gets back to normal?
I do believe the further away he moves, he'll be normal. He's fine. I don't hear any reports of long-term problems.
Okay.
And here's what happened, Austin. Their quarterback, Justin Herbert, got injured.
Right.
If you look at when Freeman played poorly, you had two challenges. You had that problem that you just mentioned with the health, and then they lost their quarterback. When Herbert came back, Freeman was great down the stretch. And I just was trying to allude a little bit. Watch him as a pass receiver when they had Marcus Mariota on the team. He was very good. I think Royce Freeman gets 40 passes in this Denver Bronco offense from Case Keenum. And the depth chart is favorable. Then I have Nick Chubb. I love Nick Chubb. Probably the best between the tackles, grinder, power, elusiveness. But you have Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson. I do not see how Nick Chubb gets 220 touches in this Cleveland offense with a terrible coach in Hugh Jackson.
Carlos Hyde gets hurt in week four. That's how it happens.
Yeah, that's the only way, right?
Yeah, but Carlos Hyde's been hurt. I mean...
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, what did he end up with? The ninth best in PPR scoring last year?
I mean, Carlos Hyde's a good player, so I understand where you're coming from.
And you still got Duke Johnson.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that's to me, I look at it and I'm saying, yes, you're right. In a best scenario, hey, Nick Chubb, the other two guys get hurt. He gets 220 catches. He's a rock star.
You still haven't named my number three, so I'm surprised you have Chubb over him for this year. So.
Okay. Sony Michel, is that your number three?
Nope.
Oh, I have Sony Michel at number three. It does concern me because you have Rex Burkhead, you have James White, and they just signed Jeremy Hill in the offseason, so I don't see the touches there. DJ Moore is my number seven. I love DJ Moore. I think he's in a great spot to get a lot of touches in Carolina. I'm hoping I got him right here now. Number eight, Ronald Jones.
That's it.
Tampa Bay.
Yep.
Hey, I understand. If you're talking about touches, you're absolutely right. I can see him with 200 touches in Tampa Bay. But here's what. I like Ronald Jones. I'm not convinced he's an every down 200 carry running back in the NFL. I was a little lower on him than most in the pre-draft process. I like him, but I'm not in love with him, and I do have my concerns, so I have him at number eight.
He's just so fast, man. He's so fast. He is.
In the open field, he's amazing. I completely agree with you. I just wonder if he's going to be able to withstand the rigor of the NFL. I have my questions about that watching the film. He also doesn't always have the best vision. There's a lot of times he seems like he has his mind made up. I'm going to hit this hole. And even if there's a tackle and a guard, he hits up into their butt. But look it. You know, so I have a few questions about his vision. I have him at number eight. Calvin Ridley is my number nine. Limited upside. I don't think he's a high ceiling player, but he's a low floor athlete. I think he'll have a nice NFL career. My number 10 is Kerryon Johnson. I like him. Crowded backfield, Theo Reddick. You still have LeGarrette Blount. I wonder if the goal line touches will be his. How many pass receptions will Theo Riddick have? So I have him at number 10. My number 11, I'm in love with. I drafted him in the second round of my dynasty draft. After Geis, I acquired Anthony Miller of the Bears.
I love Anthony Miller. I'm a little concerned about his production this season just because they seem to have so much, right? They have Jordan Howard. They have Tariq Cohen. They added Allen Robinson. They get Kevin White back. They signed Trey Burton. Adam Shaheen they drafted last season. It's just a lot of mouths to feed.
Absolutely. You know, it's a dynasty league. But I've been doing the projections quickly for him. I have him about 53 catches, about 600 yards, and 4 touchdowns. So, but the talent is there, and I believe it'll blossom in the dynasty league. And to round out my dirty dozen, Christian Kirk of the Arizona Cardinals, I think he's in a perfect landing spot with Sam Bradford, a young quarterback, and Josh Rosen. He has the alpha male and Larry Fitzgerald to demand the number one coverage from the other team. I like Kirk a lot in Arizona.
This was In This League Overtime. Some of the best from the In This League podcasts. Looking for more? Visit InThisLeague.com right now.